Nightmare Society family. I hope you all are having a great week. It managed to get below 80 degrees here in Georgia, so I was pretty stoked. October is just around the corner, and that is my favorite time of the year. I'm thinking of maybe doing some kind of contest or giveaway for listeners. So if you have any ideas for contests or prizes, I'd love to hear them. You can email them to me or message me on social media, all of which will be listed in the description. Don't forget to share Nightmare Society with your friends. Review, like, comment, whatever your preferred app allows. Now, on to the stories, and welcome to another episode of
The Nightmare Society.
The few people that I've told this story to always laugh it off or tease me, but I swear on my life that it's true. I've always loved yard sales. In the summer when I have a free day, I'll often just drive around all day looking for different yard sales, wasting my day away. About 2 years ago, I was doing this, just driving around looking for yard sale signs. Gradually going further out into the rural country and enjoying the scenery, having fun getting lost on the back country roads. You can sometimes find some great yard sales doing this. I saw a yard sale sign off of the road next to a big rock with something religious carved into it like churches have. I can't for the life of me remember what it said. God's Haven, maybe? Something religious, I can't remember. Anyways, I figure it's probably got some good stuff if it's a church organization, so I decided to go. I turn my new Jeep down the long, narrow gravel driveway, and the trees open up to a clearing with a really beautiful white house. They have long tables spread out with folded clothes, kid toys, etc. But nothing I was really interested in. There are probably 30 people milling around about on property, but they are all wearing these gray jumpsuits. Okay. The only other person that seems to be browsing their way through the wares was this old man, whose truck was also parked there, but we were the only ones, save for gray jumpsuits. The woman at the makeshift table with the money box on it begins talking to me as if I'm preparing to leave. I stride over to her for a friendly chat, and I notice that behind the house there are probably 10 or so small gray buildings that gray jumpsuits are going in and out of. After some casual chat, she notices me staring.
Yes, we all live here. It's great. Hey, would you like to come in and learn more?
She had this crazy light in her eyes, and I attempted to mumble an excuse when she nodded at three guys who had been arranging stuff on the tables, moving tables, etc. And they all came to stand around me.
Really? Come inside. We preach peace and the word of God. You'd really like it.
She took my hand and kind of started tugging me towards the house. All the while these guys are following and I'm making weak protests. Then the old man who'd been browsing paperbacks seems to take notice and comes up. He looks at the woman and says,
Sorry, ma'am, we both really gotta be going. I don't think she's interested.
The woman looks shocked, but lets go, and the guys step back. He's a scrawny old guy, and I'm a petite woman, but that badass old man grabs my arm and hustles me over to my Jeep. As I'm thanking him and yelling back to the people to have good luck with their yard sale, he mutters in a low voice,
You really need to get out of here.
My hands are shaking. All the gray jumpsuits are just turned and silently staring at us, and I'm fumbling with my keys. The old man stands by my rolled down window, and I fumble to start the car and try to back out of the narrow gravel driveway. I tried to do a 3-point turn, but my car slides down in the gravel into a shallow ditch next to the driveway, and I'm panicking.
Just take it easy, put it in 4-wheel drive,
he coaxes.
I don't know how,
I whisper frantically. I'd only had the Jeep for a couple of months at that point, and I never really had a car with 4-wheel drive before. I figured I'd learn eventually. He calmly told me how to do it, and stood there guiding me as I finally got the Jeep to stop sinking into the gravel and drove the hell out of there. I yelled thank you to him, and he nodded before getting into his truck. I told my family and a few friends, who kind of laughed and brushed it off, saying they hadn't heard of any cults in this area. Probably just a church sale at one of the members' houses. I've driven around that area a little bit after the event, but have not seen the rock sign thing again. Though, honestly, that day I drove pretty deep into rural country. I had no idea what road or where I was. I just knew the general direction to drive in to get back to a main road and eventually find my way home. I think I may have escaped a cult that is just kind of off the radar. But I swear to God it happened, and thank God that old man helped me get out of there. This story occurred in the summer of 2008. I grew up in Oregon and was acquainted with the outdoors at an early age. My favorite hobby came to be hiking, particularly in areas that are either very dangerous or isolated. The health benefits of hiking were secondary to the thrills of walking the edges of exposed cliffs, being in cougar and bear territory, and knowing that I was far from help. Into the Wild was released in the fall of 2007, and I immediately fell in love. Being a high school senior, I could barely go another week living in my parents' house. The movie spoke to my sense of adventure and inspired me to hike the California portion of the Pacific Crest Trail upon graduation. I made it from the Mexico border to Northern California without much incident. I saw a rattlesnake and black bears, experienced dehydration, but nothing happened that made me fear for my life. Somewhere in the Lassen National Forest in northeastern California, I walked around a bend in the trail only to be startled by two people sitting on a rock, dressed in nearly all white. Their faces were dirty, their appearance disheveled. And the man had a long, unkempt beard. Both seemed to be in their 40s. They looked like the couple who kidnapped Elizabeth Smart. What struck me as odd about the encounter was encountering anybody at all. I frequently went days without seeing a single human being. Their white clothes could be explained away by the need to escape the California summer sun. Their scruffy appearance could be explained away by the fact that most thru hikers abandon personal hygiene on the trail. After I said hello, they said nothing and simply watched me as I passed. Even that I didn't find odd. I chalked it up to them being foreign and not knowing what to say. I camped a few hundred yards off the trail that night, as I always did. Following bear precautions, I hung the leftover food I had cooked that night from a tree approximately 5 feet off the ground. Packing up camp in the morning, I noticed the food wasn't there. I immediately thought a bear had entered my campsite, and so I began to look for paw prints. I didn't find paw prints, but I did find boot prints circling the campsite, two pairs of them. One of those prints led right up to the rope from which the food was hanging. I thought of the couple I had passed earlier, and everything clicked. I quickly packed up and left. My mind was racing the entire day, but I figured the couple was simply hungry. If they had nefarious intentions, they would have come for more than the food. Several days passed and my mind was at ease again. I had begun to circle my campsite with sticks to wake me in the event of an intruder, animal, or otherwise. I woke in my tent one night to the sound of those sticks crunching. I grabbed my hunting knife. I tried to relax by telling myself that in the middle of nowhere, the source of that noise is much more likely an animal than a person. Then I heard frantic whispering. It was impossible to tell which direction the voices were coming from. Being in the dark, surrounded by trees 100 miles from the nearest city plays tricks on your senses. I debated yelling out, claiming to have a gun, but instead decided to be silent and retain the benefit of surprise. I heard footsteps circling my tent and was ready to slash whatever opened it. But just like that, it was over. No more footsteps, no more whispering. I lie frozen awake in my tent until sunrise and opened my tent to find nobody there. The only evidence something had actually been there were the boot prints, the same as before. Several more days passed, and I was now in Shasta National Forest, probably 50 to 75 miles away from where I first encountered the couple. The trail became more or less a goat trail. Being on the side of a mountain and above the tree line, I could see the trail winding for miles in front of and behind me. I stopped for water in the rare shade and noticed two hikers miles behind me. All I could see were two white dots moving along the mountainside. I immediately said out loud, "Screw this. This trip is over." I pulled out my map and looked for the nearest town, which appeared to be Castella, located off of I-5. The only problem was that was 25 miles away. I hiked well into the night trying to gain as much ground as possible. I kept losing the trail and decided to set up camp, this time far off the trail and into the forest. I got in my tent and tried to sleep, but every little noise kept me awake. After a few hours in my tent, I heard the telltale signs of another bad night. The footsteps, the whispering, the sticks breaking. Sound travels far in the absence of other sound. I knew they were close, but I wasn't sure how close. All I could think of was, "This is messed up. This is so messed up. Damn it." Finally, a flashlight hits my tent, lights up the entire thing, and then goes dark. I unzipped my tent and climbed out carrying my knife, yelling nonsense into the dark. It was sort of like that cliche scene in the movies where people in the wilderness hear sticks breaking around them, and then the camera pans around the trees because the people have no idea which direction the sound is coming from. Then I heard footsteps running towards the tent and barely made out a figure moving in my peripheral vision. I turned and ran deep into the forest. I tripped several times and ran into several trees. After running for approximately 5 minutes, I tripped, rolled, and came to rest next to a downed tree. I got under the tree trunk and laid still. I saw the flashlight moving around in the distance. I laid under that tree for hours. I was certain they were gone, but I did not move. Eventually, birds started chirping, and I knew sunrise would come soon. Once it did, I made my way back to the trail, abandoned my campsite, and walked the rest of the distance to Costello, where the Pacific Crest Trail crosses I-5. I hitchhiked my way to the town of Mount Shasta and spoke with the police and the Forest Service. They put me up in a motel for the night, and my parents drove from Oregon to pick me up the next day. I followed up with the police and Forest Service months later, who told me that there had been similar reports of items disappearing from campsites throughout the surrounding national forests. However, there had been no other reports of the terrorizing that I experienced. As far as I know, nothing ever came of the couple. The stories tonight are from deleted accounts. If you have a story you would like to contribute, please send it to nightmaresocietyradio@gmail.com. And don't forget to follow me on the social media listed in the description. Thank you so much for listening. And as always, stay safe.